This is a petition for further review, so Mr. Post, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, the Court of Appeals erred in concluding it was confined to review only the specific allegations in the complaint. Under Hess, this court has said that Nadeem needs to plead absence of facts that are prerequisites for the sentence. Look closely at his complaint. You don't see that. Instead, you see block quotes from prior Court of Appeals opinions involving Nadeem. Okay, that's fine. But once he does that, our position is that the state, on a motion to dismiss, should be able to look at the rest of that Court of Appeals opinion and cite to it, so that way the district court has the full picture of what happened. And that's where we believe the Court of Appeals erred, is that Nadeem...
Counsel, even if we agreed with that position, the entire opinion could not be looked at, could it? And what I'm getting at specifically is you couldn't look at the facts of that case and then somehow interject those facts into this case, could you?
I guess if I'm understanding your question correctly.
In other words, in most opinions, they start out with a fact section setting forth what the evidence was at the trial level. Those specific facts couldn't be integrated into the any complaint, even if you could look at the opinion, could it?
So, I think if he hadn't relied on that complaint, I think our argument would be
Well, the reliance on the complaint gets you there through the case law because it's incorporated. He's incorporating it into his complaint. But what I'm getting at is the holding itself you may be able to look at. But the specific facts of that were outlined in that case, can you look at those facts too? Because they're an unrelated case.
We think you can. And if the rule is, as your question surmises, then he wouldn't be able to cite to those facts either. He'd have to make specific factual allegations instead of block quotes. Even in that instance, then he wouldn't be able to plead the case.
But under other case law, We don't allow adjudicated facts and disputes to be taken judicial notice of. So in essence, those principles would apply here, wouldn't they?
I think at the point that there's, again, I think we have to come back to that there's no allegation in this complaint, there are no factual allegations that do anything to negate anything from the prior case. Instead, he's relying on facts from his prior case. All we're saying is, at that point, if he's pleading nothing else, do we have to wait for summary judgment to introduce the other side of the story from the document he's citing, or can we cite the same factual summary that he's citing in response to motion to dismiss?
Well, it was his citing that even proper, or were those conclusions drawn by the Court of Appeals from the facts? In other words, Are those concise statements of the facts under our pleading rules, or are those conclusionary statements drawn by the Court of Appeals after they reviewed the facts?
Well, Nadeem is an interesting case because of the number of times it went up and down the system, but there was a point in time in the Court of Appeals opinion where they say that evidence was sufficient, so that was a conclusion. But at no point was there any dispute about the specific facts in the case. Maybe I'm misunderstanding your question here.
My question is Nadeem cites the factual conclusions drawn by the Court of Appeals as his factual statement. Is that a proper procedure?
I don't believe so. But if you took it out of that context and you just removed it, he did the exact same words word for word. I think he could do that. We see that all the time where people quote things, but this is a factual allegation claim, not actually cite that prior opinion. I think he could plead that. I don't think we can say he's barred from pleading those facts.
Okay, thank you.
the briefing, Mr. Nadim cites specifically paragraphs 9, 11, and 15 of the complaint for as being, those paragraphs are the ones that show that he pled the absence of facts that are prerequisites. But when you look closely at those paragraphs, what you see is paragraphs 9 and 11 are referencing the first library, the first conversation. They're not referencing anything that had to do with the substantial step or anything that happened on the phone call or when the library. And paragraph 15 is largely a block quote related to the issues Nadim has with the police conduct. But again, this case isn't about what the police did. This is a civil case where Nadim has the burden to plead and then prove what he did and show that. And the dissent by Judge Bishop, I think, clearly spells this out. This isn't a case where Nadim is saying, I wasn't there, I didn't do it, there's DNA evidence, or even something as simple as, I went to the library to get a book. There's nothing. In fact, he's saying entrapment. He's saying, I actually did those things. I was just induced into doing it. And at that point, we don't believe that Nadim has pled actual innocence, which is the third element. And I do want to clarify that under the wrongful conviction statute, in this case, we're not disputing elements 1, 2, or 4. This is purely about element 3. So whether or not he has pled sufficient facts under the S standard. And if there are no further questions, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Mr. Patterson, good morning to you.
Police Court, I'm Jeff Patterson. I represent Mohammed Nadim has said I'm innocent. He said I'm innocent at every step. When his conviction was reversed and he was sent back for retrial, he said I'm innocent. He wouldn't take a plea. He always said I'm innocent. Now, it seems to me that we're being asked to come up with whatever the magic words are for his innocence. What the Court of Appeals said, and until just now, Mr. Post has never really addressed what the Court of Appeals decision was. What the Court of Appeals said was, paragraphs 9, 11, and 15 sufficiently allege actual innocence on Mr. Nadim's part. And that's true. And as Justice Bill Fleming said in the first appeal, we're here, I wrote it down because it's just, we're here on a motion to dismiss, so we're looking at the complaint. And what Mr. Post wants you to do, as Justice Kelch was saying, is not look at other factors. And certainly, we address they really aren't facts. They're inferences from, the facts are really pretty plain. But the conviction is based only on the inferences to be derived from the facts.
Counsel, can you take quotations from a published opinion and those constitute your concise statement of facts?
What we did, to address that in terms of what we did, we adopted those conclusions of the Court of Appeals where the evidence was examined deferential to Mr. Nadim, because we thought that accurately stated Mr. Nadim's intent on in everything.
But those aren't your statements. That's not Mr. Nadim's statements. That's the Court of Appeals' conclusion from examining the facts, isn't it?
Right, but the conviction wasn't based really upon, it's not based, what he said is not a crime. Going to the library is not a crime. None of his conduct is criminal. It's only the inference to be derived from his conduct that is thought to be criminal. Now, Mr. Nadim has always disputed the inference to be derived from his conduct. So what we have done is we have taken the inferences that the Court of Appeals saw when they were looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to Mr. Nadim, and we've adopted those statements because we think that they accurately express particularly what occurred in the controlled call.
Do you say in the complaint we adopt these?
No, but I think it's clear that I state it. And certainly if it needs to be remanded so that we say we adopt these, it certainly could. But then again, I think we're getting into the territory of magic words, and this has always been what this is about. How do you say I'm innocent in a complaint? Can't say I'm innocent because he clearly does.
Counsel, I want to give you three examples, and then I know it's a difficult question, but we have a difficult job of looking at these type of situations. In your complaint, you use phrases like hysterical speculation, entirely innocent encounter. Absence of any evidence. Are those statements of facts or statements of conclusion?
I don't know. I don't know that you're reading everything there.
No, I'm not. I'm taking those out of context, but those are the key phrases within those paragraphs.
Well, what you limited your question to is I would say that those are conclusions, except maybe the, what was the middle one?
Entirely innocent. The encounter with HK was entirely innocent.
Again, that's a conclusion that had to be supported in the facts, too. And the facts are the conversation in the library.
Okay.
So, again, I don't... Mr. Nadine says he's innocent. He's always maintained he's innocent. I don't know that there's a magic word for saying I'm innocent. Court of Appeals said those three paragraphs are sufficient to state actual innocence. In the supplemental briefing that I supplied, I provided a number of other paragraphs. They were 2, 5, 6, 7, 8, 17, 18, 20, 21. But I also think when they're read, the reasonable inferences are then, that those are actually, those state actual instances too. What the state wants you to do is to look at the text from the several prior Court of Appeals opinions and look at the text where the analysis is deferential to the state. Wants to look at there where the analysis is whether Mr. Nadine can be tried again. That's just as clearly contrary to the standard of the evidence. Any conflict in the evidence, any conflict in the inferences in the evidence has to inure to Mr. Nadine's benefit. The state is asking you to ignore that. Something different. One of the things, and I don't know if I should really bring this up, but I've got one of the things that was in the opinion, the district court opinion dismissing was that district court believed that we had pled entrapment, not actual innocence. And that was really not addressed in the court opinion. I don't know if this court is going to go beyond what was in the petition for further review. But if you do, I just want to clarify again, you're not pleading innocence because he was entrapped. Saying he's innocent because he was innocent. He never had any intention whatsoever of going to a public library to have intercourse. I've always looked at that and thought, how in the world is that possible? And I don't understand why a jury that looks at the objective facts would think that it's at all possible that a substantial step in committing a sexual assault is going to a public library. But that's what convicted Mr. Nadine. So, again, to make it clear, we are not pleading actual innocence because he's entrapped. He's actually innocent because he is actually innocent. Justice Monk, I thought a look on your face like you were going to say something.
Well, you say there's actual innocence. What is the claim of the actual innocence?
And he had no intention of going. Sexual assault.
So it's the intent of going on the second trip to the library.
Yeah, I mean, on the first trip, there's absolutely...
A lot of these allegations deal with the first trip to the library, the way I read them.
Right.
And then the phone call, which is entrapment. So then the second trip is the third kind of step of this, or leg of this stool, I guess. And so the actual innocence is... His second trip to the library was because he just didn't have the intent to commit the sexual assault.
My recollection in the charging document was that he was charged with attempting a sexual assault on both days, on August 6th and August 7th. So both of those were addressed. No evidence. First encounter of sexual content or conversation whatsoever. In the control call, that was the inducement, not that Mr. Nadine showed confusion, hesitance, that he didn't understand the meaning. And Mr. Nadine is a refugee from Sudan, which at the time system. And then going to the library was not to have sex with someone.
despite the conversation beforehand and the initial visit.
Right, and certainly someone could be, could wonder, I mean, the conversation is so unusual that you would have to wonder what's going on. And as the evidence is, you know, I hesitate to put evidence in as something that's awesome. As the evidence goes on, that information will come out why you went to this library. But what is clear on the face of the pleading itself is that he didn't library have intercourse.
Thank you.
Nothing further.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 2 minutes and 40 seconds?
3 minutes.
3 minutes and 40 seconds, Mr. Post.
To try to respond to your question, if Mr. Nadim can adopt those facts, it's our position that we should be able to use the rest of the facts from that document responding to the motion to dismiss. But if he can't use them at all, then he's left with only the, he's only left with recitations of elements of the cause of action and conclusory statements as this court identified. He needs further factual enhancement. All you just heard was the words actual innocence, actual innocence, actual innocence. Yes, that's what the statute says. This court would never say just pleading the words duty, breach, causation, damages is enough. You have to plead facts supporting actual innocence. If he can't rely on that opinion, he has absolutely no facts.
So, for example, what would he put in to his petition?
Well, it's in one of his briefs. I don't think it actually helps him, but in his response to the petition for further review, he says that reportedly he was going to the library to figure out whoever was talking dirty to him. Not sure that helps him in the end in the wrongful conviction case, but okay, maybe he could have pled that. He could have pled some reason why he was going
Counsel,
to the library.
Counsel, wouldn't actual innocence be more along the lines of I wasn't the person at the library, I wasn't the person on the phone call, versus arguing over the facts and an intent? Because facts and intent is more of a legal innocence than an actual innocence, isn't it?
Correct. And that's another great example. I wasn't there. There's DNA that shows someone else. He has to plead something. He has to show some facts that lead the district court to believe it's at least plausible that when this case is opened up to discovery, there's going to be something to look at.
Can you expand on why pleading no intent would be insufficient?
Well, and I think that gets back to Hess. So I understand he's pleading no intent, but under Hess you said that he has to show the absence of facts. And so he hasn't pled anything to negate all of the facts we've been talking about today that go into all those things. He has to plead something to say, I didn't do it because it wasn't me or it wasn't something else, right? The other particularly problematic thing.
How would you do that with respect to the element of intent?
Would you have to
say things like, I don't think like that, or maybe, didn't imagine this, I didn't understand? What would get you there
book.
From a pleading standpoint?
Again,
with respect to intent.
Yeah, my intent was to check out a book. Again, he's just saying, well, that wasn't my intent. Okay? What was? Why did you... We're left to just guess today why he went to the library that day under facts that he wants to use in his complaint. And at that point, I mean, we don't believe he's cleared the hurdle with sufficient facts. We have to have something. If there are no further questions, we would ask that you reverse and remand to the Court of Appeals with directions to affirm the dismissal by the district.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the